Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Port of Origin by Lisa Harris. When virus-infected pirates hijack a humanitarian medical ship from an African port, they trigger the threat of a global pandemic. How do you keep hope alive in a sea of darkness? An African fisherman. Foreign exploitation of Africa's natural resources has destroyed the fishing business of Dabir Omar. Hijacking oil tankers brings cash to his family in their remote village, but it doesn't buy the medical care needed to stop the deadly sickness attacking his people. When Dabir's son becomes ill, the desperate pirate sets sail for the Liberty, an international humanitarian medical ship ported on the coast. An American surgeon. Against his better judgment, Dr. Josiah Allen agrees to work a two-week surgical stint on the Liberty, moored in Douala, Cameroon. Shortly after he arrives with his precocious 6-year-old daughter, Josiah is sent ashore to investigate a mysterious illness at the ship's post-op clinic. While he's gone, Ebola-infected pirates hijack the medical ship where Josiah left his daughter. The woman compelled to save them all. When pirate negotiations fail, Mackenzie Scott's privately owned extraction unit comes in for the rescue. But when the medical ship where Mac has taken a wounded comrade is hijacked by pirates, the former military pararescue jumper becomes the pirate's key hostage. Both fathers go to war to save their children. If Mac can't convince them to work together, the winner of this conflict will be a deadly virus intent on destroying the world.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have with me Lisa Harris. She's a Christie Award finalist and a winner, and she's also, her books have won the Best Inspirational Suspense Novel for a couple of years. And she has almost 40 novels and novellas in print. So welcome to my show, Lisa.
Thanks so much for having me, Sarah.
Now, we're recording this in early May, and I say that because we may talk about the pandemic that's happening. But when this airs, it may or may not be top of mind. But have you, and I've seen a lot of memes out there recently, like, yes. Oh, well, we have all this time to write. Now, if you're anything like me, Lisa, you know, there is that thing called family.
Yes.
and you know, I have 4 kids at home, and we're also foster parents, so we have a preschool foster in our house, and I don't have as much time to write as I thought I would. Have you found that to be your experience, or maybe you're just more disciplined than I am?
I wish I was. No, I'm pretty much in the same boat. I came back to the United States. We live overseas, so I could be with my college-age kids. You know, they lost their jobs, and they couldn't be at the school. And so we're hunkered down here in Oklahoma. I've also got my mother, who's been in quarantine probably for 2 months in assisted living.
Yeah.
And I'm having to, you know, connect with her every day. And I've also found there's so many distractions, and just because you have more hours in the day, supposedly, doesn't mean your brain, you know, can work that much longer. So it has been a struggle, actually.
Yeah, I found that too. And, you know, I kept seeing, like I said, all these posts about, oh, wow, now you can finally get to that book you wanted to write. I'm thinking,
right.
Who are these people? I mean,
I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I guess people who have no kids and they're all by themselves in a house, you know, right. Then I probably might get a lot of stuff done. Who knows?
That's a story, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would be. It would be. So how are you finding that time to write?
Well, the good thing is most of them are in school and college, but they're having to do it online.
Mm.
And so for some reason, you know, college kids like to stay up really late, and they do study late, though. They're studying late. And they get up late, and I've decided I'm not going to mess with their schedule because I actually like it. So I have quiet in the morning.
Oh, yes.
So I'm kind of enjoying that, and then they'll get up and they'll kind of do their thing. But the good thing is they're busy with their schoolwork, which kind of gives me a little bit of extra time as well.
Yeah, but it's that focus like you were talking about. I mean, I finally, in the last 2 weeks, have just kind of gotten back on track. I mean, on a consistent basis.
There's lots of distractions. Yes. There's lots of distractions. There's lots of laundry. There's lots of cooking. There's lots of cleaning. And I'm thankful that they're all old enough, you know, obviously, to help. And they do. But there's still just a lot to do.
There is. And I think that this is just a, I don't know, I just find it kind of interesting that, you know, people think, oh, well, now you can have time to write. I'm like, yeah, but you kind of had to fit it into your life before. I mean, there's very few of us who can be full-time writers.
Right.
You know, maybe one day, but I doubt it. No.
Yeah.
You know, I just have other...
so many other things as well that's going on that you have to deal with, exactly.
Yeah, so I find that, you know, this has been, definitely upended our lives in a different way, but it still hasn't been like, oh, well, now I have more time because I'm not going anywhere. I mean, for me, I have four kids in school, two high schoolers, a middle schooler, and an upper elementary school, besides our preschooler. And, I mean, it's been a lot of work trying to make sure that they're able to do their work.
Yeah, and I found also beyond just the schoolwork, which my kids can do on their own because they're college age, but there's so many uncertainties, and that's affecting them as well. And so I have found that it's important to spend time just checking in with them and saying, okay, how are you doing emotionally? Because I know you were planning to do that, you know, such and such this summer, and now all your, you know, nobody knows what they're doing. And that is a lot of stress, I think, for kids of any age.
Yes. And a lot of stress for us, too. I mean, let's just not forget us. And I find that,
right.
really, I mean, and so when I'm thinking about, you know, my writing in the midst of all this stuff going on, and even when this podcast airs, probably in the summer, we're still going to have the residual effects of everything that happened, you know, society kind of shutting down, and how we work through that stress. And do you have any tips for any aspiring writers or writers who might be listening to how, you know, even when you're going through a stressful time, because writing can be very, you know, stress relieving in a lot of ways as well.
True, right. I know for me it definitely is. I think it's kind of, I've always looked at it kind of as a therapy.
Yes.
But I've also learned that you can't wait until you feel creative, because I think that's been my biggest struggle with all of this. Like, you know, my husband's actually overseas. We're not even in the same continent right now.
Yeah.
And so if I wait to feel creative, I'm really just not feeling creative. There is a lot of added stress of all the uncertainties, and I hear a lot of people say, you know, you got to take time to take care of yourself, and to, I don't know exactly what that looks like on most levels.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get enough sleep. I think that's important.
Right.
To eat fairly healthy. But I think, and I've learned this not just from this pandemic, but you just cannot wait until you feel creative. I've had to learn, you know, just, I have to sit down and I have to write. And I think for any writer, that is just what we have to do. And it's not going to be maybe all the extra hours that we were hoping for. But even if it's just for a small time to, you know, to get down and every day just kind of get into it a little bit, even if you don't feel like it, I think that discipline is very important.
It is.
And now.
Yes. Yeah, I agree. And I guess it's kind of funny. Like 2 weeks ago, I said to my Write Online Crit group, we've been doing goals every week. And I was like, I have one goal, just write something every day.
Right.
You know, seven days straight. And, you know, I confess, a couple of days, it was like maybe 200-300 words, you know, maybe.
But that's better than nothing.
But that, yes. And so now I'm going into week three where my modest goal is write something every day. And I've done it for the past 14 days, even when I haven't felt like it.
That makes you feel so good, too.
It does. I'm like, woo, yay me.
And I think setting those goals are important, too. I mean, I sat down this morning and wrote down my goals for the week. And even if I don't make it, at least it feels good crossing things off as I go. And I'm going to try to have some grace on myself. That's what I've learned as well, especially recently. I mean, I haven't necessarily made all my goals, but if I have some grace to myself, then at least I'm writing my goals and I'm crossing them out, even if it takes me, you know, longer than I expected, at least. Making progress makes me feel better. Like, I haven't just wasted a whole day, you know, worrying.
Right, yes, yeah. But it is so true that, you know, you can be as specific with your goals or as open-ended as you need to be. You know, I know some writers go, I'm going to write 1,000 words a day. Well, I knew I wasn't going to be able to do that. So rather than feel defeated, I was like, I'm just going to write something every day.
Right, right.
You know, make some sort of forward progress on my word count, whatever that meant. And I just told myself that I was going to be happy with that, that
right.
that was going to be good. Because it is a, I mean, writing is a discipline.
It is, definitely.
And it's yeah. one that if you don't exercise it frequently, you know, it takes you longer and longer to get back into it.
And I've noticed if I miss days, it makes it harder. It's always harder to get back into it. But even if I do just a little bit every day, I feel like I'm in the story. I feel
yes.
like I'm moving forward. And that definitely makes a difference, at least for me.
Oh, no, I totally agree, Lisa, in that. Because I think because you're not having to play catch up.
Right. And remember, now who was the
mm-hmm.
characters? I can't
yeah.
remember.
yeah. Who was that? And why were they doing this particular thing?
Right.
And then in writing, you know, romantic suspense, we have those two threads going. You know, we have
exactly.
the suspense part where we have to keep track because nobody wants to come to the end of the book and go, oh, that's who did it? Or whatever
right.
mystery, you know, suspenseful thing we're trying to unravel and have they have no idea how that happened because we didn't pay attention to all the
exactly.
the little clues along the way. It should be someone that they kind of know, not some stranger. Woohoo, here we are. And then, you
yeah,
know, develop.
Very true.
Yeah, because we've all read books like that, have we?
Yes, and it drives me crazy.
It does. It drives me crazy. I just want to throw the book across the room and be like,
yeah.
what?
I've done it a few times.
yeah. Yeah. Well, one time I was on my Kindle, so I didn't throw my Kindle, but I was just like, what? This is no. I'm, you know, I. Anyway, I won't go down that rabbit trail, but pet peeve of mine. So I'm trying to be very careful about that when you're writing. And if you're not, if you don't write often enough, then you tend to kind of drop those things. And,
definitely, yeah.
You know, then your beta readers are, you know, they're like, what are you doing?
Right.
So that. So where do you find your kind of inspiration for writing, since we're kind of talking about that, for your storylines? Is it tied to your, I know your most recent book is Port of Origin, is that right?
Yeah, and interestingly enough, it is about a pandemic.
Yes, I saw that. I thought, oh, how fun.
Which is very strange because I promised, I co-wrote this with Lynn Gentry, and We started this book about 10 years ago, and we this was the second book in the series, and the first one came out in 2017, and so, I mean, it took us a long time, because we've got, you know, a lot of other things going on.
Right.
And so we finally decided last year we're going to finish this story, and so it was, we were kind of doing all the edits and stuff, when everything just kind of started going down this crazy path of a pandemic, and we were like, I don't know, it was just so weird to... I mean, it's different from our story, but so many things are, you know, we had dealt with in this book, and it was just very odd, the timing that was just so, you know, just at the
right,
time.
Yeah. Yes, you look almost, you know, like you had a magic ball or something looking into
exactly.
the future. But, so many times I think because writers, especially fiction writers, I mean, we're always wondering what if.
Right. And
you know,
this was definitely a big what if. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I'm
now,
not...
Unfortunately, we know.
Yes, now we know, but...
Yeah.
You know, but there's also... I mean, there was things about, natural disasters, and people wrote things, and then this, you know, tsunami happened, and they're like, well, you know, because we're always thinking, well, what if this happened? What if that happened? And having a global pandemic is not so crazy to think about. I mean, they've had them in the past. It's just been a while.
With transportation and everything.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. We're really always only like one step away. And the interesting thing, too, was I was worried. I thought nobody's going to want to read this book. You know, who's going to want to read a book that they're living out? But it has been interesting. I think people are kind of two camps. One, they want nothing to do with anything, you know, that has to do with a pandemic or anything
right.
like that. And then, but people are also eating up this genre. And
yes.
so that's kind of exciting. And in a way, we've also had a book 3 that we were planning to put out this fall. And it definitely motivated me to want to finish it, because I think there is a readership that's there just wanting to read it. And I think because this is Christian fiction, there's also that thread of hope.
Yes.
I think people definitely need that hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and I'm hoping that this book is not just didn't happen to coincide with a pandemic, but it also is there to give that hope to people who read it.
I know.
That's kind of our desire.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the privileges we have to write, you know, romantic suspense from a Christian perspective, or Christian romantic suspense. I really don't like Christian romantic suspense, but I've,
yeah.
I prefer to think of myself as a writer who writes from a Christian worldview, rather than exclusively for the Christian market. But that's a whole other.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know, that kind of, you know, and so they can see how faith really informs our writing, but it also gives us the opportunity to have our characters in these situations. You know, you happen to have a global pandemic in your book,
right.
Or just, you know, in these situations where they have to make these decisions, which sometimes they're life and death, but many times they're just, you know, am I going to stay angry at this person? Am I going to hold a grudge? Am I going to seek revenge? Am I going to let bitterness take root in my heart? I mean, these are all things that our characters struggle with. We just put them in a kind of exciting.
Yeah. Well, and in writing romantic suspense, I put them in all kinds of terrible situations. Some probably, I mean, just as bad, really, as a pandemic that affect them, you know, in a more personal way.
Mm-hmm.
And, I love the fact that at least it can end. It doesn't always have everything tied up in a neat bow at the end, because I found with romantic suspense, you can't always do that. But you can definitely have that thread of hope at the end that, you know, shows the character's growth and the grace that they find, and just the peace, you know, that they find, or whatever it is in the scenario of that book. And I love just the fact that justice is served in a world where we don't always see that happen.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, usually the romantic leads are together at the end, and that's always nice, too. You know,
of course.
To be happy living. There ought to be happy endings.
Definitely.
You know,
definitely.
In books. And I think that, you know, when we can give our readers that with characters who, you know, do struggle with their faith and who live out their faith in a way that is really, you know, real, that can give that hope, too, that impact on others' lives. So it's always kind of fun to do that. So what's next for you, Lisa? You said you're working on another book in the series?
Yes, we are. Lynn and I together are part of a box set that will be coming out in October. It's only 99 cents. So that's kind of exciting. And it's going to be, it's a novel, but it's a little bit shorter, but it's tied in very closely to some of the characters in Port of Origin. And then we are definitely hoping to get book three out. I don't know if it's going to come out in the fall, but we are in the process of working on that. That'll be kind of the conclusion to the series. So it's definitely a lot of fun, especially with the climate today.
Yes, yeah. So, well, we are at the end of our time. I can't believe it. So anything else you want to share with our listeners about you, your writing, anything at all?
Well, I would just love to hear from my readers, and you can look at all my books at my website, which I'm assuming you'll probably put up.
Yes, it's all that. I have a whole connect with her below this podcast, on this podcast, so you can just look at that up and find out how to get in touch with Lisa. And you'll stay tuned, because after this ends right now, you'll hear an excerpt from her book. So thank you again for being on my show, Lisa.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and today I was talking with Lisa Harris. She's an award-winning author of Christian Romantic Suspense, and you can connect with her again with the links with this podcast, and I hope you join me next time.
Now an excerpt from Port of Origin by Lisa Harris. Prologue. Off the coast of Cameroon, Central Africa. Since ancient times, the sea had been generous. Tuna, sardines, ocean prawns big as a man's hand. But those days of plenty had vanished in the wake of the foreign trawlers, whose illegal fishing practices were destroying the coastline's natural resources. De Beer watched the moon slip behind a veil of clouds, leaving him and his brothers to navigate the vast Atlantic in an eerie shroud of darkness. From his position at the end of the boat, he could see little beyond the shadowy silhouettes of his father and his two youngest brothers. He stopped rowing for a moment as he waited for the sharp tug of the nylon fishing net that would signal the night's first catch. A wave smashed against the side of the narrow craft, reminding him of the dangers of straying too far into the open waters. He searched for the light of the trawlers that swept the sea's floor with their ghost-like underwater lights while their wide metal jaws devoured everything in sight. But tonight, there was no sign of the floodlights used to lure the fish into their nets, which meant the deadly boats could be anywhere, trying to avoid the overworked coastal patrols searching in vain for those illegal vessels that strayed into the zone reserved for the smaller vessels. All Dabir could do was pray his father's boat steered clear of the stealthy trawlers that prowled the darkness, and pray that they would catch enough fish to feed their family another day. Except for the rhythmic slap of waves against the boat and the distant roar of the incoming tide against the shoreline, a silence settled between them. His brothers, Leo and Chomba, were too young to recall the sea's bounty or the fat prawns found where the river emptied into the ocean. Even he barely remembered the feel of a full belly and a nice profit. But so far their efforts, like the night before and the one before that, had brought nothing but a meager catch of tiny fingerlings. No fish meant famine, which is why he'd left university in the capital in order to help provide for his family, and to ensure his son didn't have to do the same. Anger rose, breaking the surface like the great blue marlin, but resentment would do nothing to fill the stomachs of his brothers or his wife and young son. Ignoring the gnawing emptiness in his gut, he waited for the dawn that would soon arrive, bringing with it the fiery ball that splashed pink across the distant horizon. His wife would be among the women who lined the shoreline with their empty metal pans on their heads, anticipating the dozens of small wooden canoes with their colorful painted sides to return with a better catch than the night before. Once again, he would disappoint her.
"We need to change our course,"
De Beer's father shouted, and dug his paddle hard into the choppy water. A spray of salt water brushed his face, burning De Beer's chapped lips. He searched for the horizon as he rowed, but the black night made it impossible to see, and his empty stomach made it impossible to go home too soon. De Beer heard the low rumble of the trawler before he saw it. A sliver of moonlight broke through the clouds and settled on the side of the rusty hull of the giant trawler that dwarfed their wooden pirogue. The small boat tipped in the wake of the larger vessel.
"Hold on!" De Beer screamed.
Their wooden boat groaned, then split in two. The smashed skiff plunged into the murky waters, sucking De Beer into its depths. He gasped for air as the sea engulfed him. Panic flooded his chest. Disoriented, he searched for the surface, but only darkness surrounded him. Lungs threatened to burst. A trail of moonlight glistened above him, revealing a stream of tiny bubbles. He propelled himself upward, emerged, then filled his lungs with air. Something thrashed in the water a boat length away. De Beer grabbed a splintered piece of wood and bridged the distance between them. Leo and Chumba struggled to stay afloat on a jagged piece of wreckage.
"Where's father?"
Leo shouted.
"Don't let go!" De Beer shouted back. "I'll find him!"
Senses heightened, De Beer searched the dark, bobbing surface of the endless Gulf of Guinea for a sign of their father. His muscles cramped. Every second that passed pushed him and his brothers closer to succumbing to the deadly currents. But he would not return to his family's compound without his father. He screamed his father's name over and over again.
silence greeted him. Something brushed across his arm, and Dabir felt his heart plummet. The still body of his father floated to the surface. He reached out to grasp his cold hand as the trawler veered away from them, its foreign captain unaware of the fractured wreck beneath the ship's massive hull. Dabir pulled the limp body against him and swore his revenge. They'd taken his livelihood, and now his father. The men in those giant ships would take nothing more.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.